Question before we start.
Mm-hmm.
Have you all considered delivering in another room if we have a full house? I don't know if we will. I'm just saying if we do.
Yes. I don't recall the...
We did once. Maybe they're the last ethics. I don't think we planned.
How do you record it?
No.
That would be an issue.
It would have to be portable. But, yeah. We're not really set up to do that. People shouldn't be coming until 12:30. There was some overlap the last time, as I recall.
There was.
Yeah. I think we rectified it.
Warm assistance room. Hold up from the miracle to start the meeting. Would you like to join? Yes, I mean, that was the, we just get notified that it's 10 o'clock. Okay, you want to like to join? Okay.
The time is now 10 o'clock, and we will convene the October 4th meeting of the District of Columbia Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. My name is Tamika Collier, Chair of the Board. I am here with Shamari Wade and Darren Sobin. That constitutes three of the four sitting members, so we do have a quorum. First matter on the agenda is the adoption of the agenda. I'll give you a few minutes, 1 minute, to look over the agenda. All right, all those in favor of adopting the October 4th, 2018 agenda, please signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Right, the meeting has been adopted. We'll now turn to approval of the September 6, 2018 meeting minutes. And those were just added to the Dropbox this morning. So I, again, will give you a few minutes to actually look over those meeting minutes.
Is this the one that says draft on it?
It's the one that says meeting minutes. 9/6/18 meeting minutes.
Is there a watermark that says draft?
Yes, that's what I'm looking at.
Is that an issue?
It's draft.
Oh, I see. All right, all those in favor of adopting the September 6, 2018 meeting minutes with the understanding that the draft watermark will be removed before it is published, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, we have adopted the September 6 meeting minutes. We'll now turn to Director Allen for an update for OOG. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairperson Collier and members of the board. I'm Nikkel Allen, Director of the Office of Open Government, and I'm pleased to present this monthly report on the activities of the OOG. The OOG dismissed an OMA complaint on October 3rd. The complaint was against the Commission on Selection and Tenure of Administrative Law Judges and the Office of Administrative Hearings. The complainant requested that the OOG provide the following relief. One, nullify the COST's hearing, which the complainant contends was improperly conducted, and two, order the COST to comply with the complainant's FOIA request. The OOG denied the complainant's first request because the request to nullify the COST's hearing is tantamount to granting the complainant a private right of action under the OMA, which is improper. The complainant's second request was denied because it exceeds the OOG's statutory authority. With respect to informal OMA and FOIA advice, since the September board meeting, the OOG responses for informal and technical advice regarding the OMA and FOIA are as follows. The OOG provided 12 substantive responses to requests for FOIA advice and 5 substantive responses for OMA advice. The OOG also provided 5 responses to OMA requests for technical assistance. And the next item is training. On September 7th through September 9th, I attended the National Association of Parliamentarians Conference in Buffalo, New York. The training focused on parliamentary procedure and included a training session on the open meetings laws. On September 10th through 11th, application engineer Wada Kitab attended the Development Security Conference in Boston, Massachusetts. The conference focused on the role of cybersecurity in the development of information technology operations. On September 21st, OOG Attorney Advisor Johnny Barton and I attended the DC Bar's training on more effective writing makes more effective lawyers. The training focused on legal drafting techniques. And on September 26th, the OOG conducted a FOIA training for approximately 45 employees of the Department of Insurance, Security, and Banking. This training was titled The ABCs of FOIA, and this new FOIA presentation was also published on the open.dc.gov website.
Great. Regarding the parliamentary procedure and open meeting law training, did you get any takeaways, best practices to bring back?
Yes, absolutely. Other jurisdictions have adopted, for example, a parliamentary procedure book, so they use Robert's Rules of Order as a matter of course. Got a lot of instruction about how to conduct meetings and the difference between a meeting for the OMA versus just using Robert's Rules of Order. We had a case here where that was an issue. So that training in particular provided insight about the difference between the OMA and parliamentary procedure, noting that, of course, whatever law is in place that takes precedent over parliamentary procedure and the procedure itself, Robert's Rules of Order notes that. And I also made connections with counterparts in jurisdictions in South Carolina and Texas, and also spoke to someone in California and Massachusetts. So got some good connections to help to ask questions in the future about how other jurisdictions are using parliamentary procedure and implementing it.
And what are the plans for any outreach training where you could even potentially include, you know, the ABCs of parliamentary procedure or how to conduct a meeting?
Yes, that is in the works. I am considering doing that. I would like to get a registered parliamentarian to eventually participate in some of our trainings for a larger group. I think that would be very helpful. And I am working to learn more about parliamentary procedure and considering becoming a registered parliamentarian myself. On to special projects. On September 18th, I met with OCTFME to discuss the production of a training video for OOG similar to the training video currently utilized by the Office of Government Ethics. We discussed the budget for the video, potentially to look for it to be in line with the OGE video or hopefully a little cheaper since it's the government. We're looking to produce 7 vignettes on OMA to be incorporated in future training sessions. And we also discussed filming a narrative that could become a full-length training video. The next step with the agency, with OCTFME, is negotiating a memorandum of understanding.
And do you have this allocated in your fiscal year 19 budget? Would you be able to cover it?
Yes. I reached out to Awan Muhammad, and Muhammad Awan, and he said that would be possible with the current budget. On September 21st, I met with the DC Bar to discuss participation in beta testing for the DC Bar's production unit. The DC Bar would produce videos in its production studios, and the OOG would test the DC Bar's production offering and provide feedback so that DC Bar can refine its production offering. I'm a member of the Bar, so I can participate in that capacity or as office. I think we're working out exactly the details, but I'm very excited about the potential of that prospect, and I would use it for FOIA since we're working on OMA with OCTFME.
Great. More specifically, in my capacity there as the Chief Programs Officer, I introduced our Open Government Director to the head of the studio, which is just now getting up and running, and they actually are looking for beta testers, and I could think of no one better suited for that role
yes.
than our own director. And so the deal is that as long as she gives honest and open feedback on her experience with the DC Bar's production program and facilities, the use would be free of charge. We did reach out to Mr. Flowers to see if that would be considered a donation and should go through the donation process, and I think they're still talking about that, but we're happy to,
correct.
You know, find and sign any of the donation agreements. There's no quid pro quo expected. There's no money involved.
Excellent.
Moving on to outreach activity. On September 20th, I met with Ron Ross and Melissa Tucker of the Mayor's Office of Legal Counsel. The primary topic of our discussion was FOIA. We discussed FOIA trainings and the OOG's role in advising agencies in the appeal process. The MOLC expressed a need to remain impartial during the appeals process and noted that it would forward requests for legal advice regarding FOIA appeals to the OOG.
And do you have any sense of what that volume would look like? Would that impact the resources that you have available to you? Did you go into details at all?
We did not go into details about the volume. I don't think it would be that much of an uptick, but I would expect an increase in volume, but not a significant one.
Okay. Let's keep that on our radar as we look about staffing within OOG.
The second outreach activity on September 20th, I presented at the DC Open Government Coalition meeting. I discussed the vision for OOG in the future and the OOG's plan to increase training and public outreach regarding FOIA and the OMA. I also received questions from DC OGC members. Of note, former OOG Director Tracy Hughes was present at the meeting and is serving as the DC OGC Vice President. Legislation. Since the September board meeting, the DC Council Committee on Health is considering the Preservation of Electronic Recordings of Meetings Amendment Act of 2018. This bill would amend the Open Meetings Act to require the preservation of recorded meetings for 5 years. Attorney Barton will provide additional background information at this time.
Good morning, Mr. Barton.
Good morning. The OOG worked closely with Council Member Gray's office on the Preservation of Electronic Records of Meetings Emergency Amendment and Temporary Acts, both of which apply the 5-year record retention requirement only to records maintained by the UMC board. The measure the Committee on Health will mark up today differs from the emergency and temporary bills by amending OMA to mandate that all public bodies and not just the UMC board maintain records of public records of meetings recorded by electronic means for a minimum of 5 years. So basically, it requires all public bodies across the board. It's our understanding now that different public bodies have different document retention schedules. Public bodies must also still adhere to the district document government retention schedules that have a further impact on the retention of documents. And a review of those schedules indicate that basically once a public body would keep the records for 5 years, they can then transfer them over to the archives. And the archives' general schedule appears now to say that those records will be kept permanently unless the archives sees otherwise.
Okay. That was one of my questions. So the individual body maintains the records for 5 years, but they are not destroyed after 5 years. They are archived.
They have to get permission from the archives to take further action with those documents.
Okay.
Where is that said? Is that said in the legislation?
That's in the regulations covering document retention. I think it's a separate law, also the regulations.
And where did the 5 years come from?
The five-year period?
Yeah, is that industry government standard?
I think the federal government is 7 years.
So it depends. Each agency is different. And one of the other concerns I had is, which you've addressed it some, if this is archived versus just being actively maintained, 5 years seems like a perfectly reasonable amount of time if you're just talking about day-to-day activities. If you're talking about the vote that is memorialized on an electronic recording is the only evidence of an action taken, an official action taken by an agency, 5 years doesn't seem like very long to me. But again, you've addressed some of that concern. As long as this doesn't give the body the right to destroy that information.
It does not. It's a minimum of 5 years. Some may keep their records longer, but before they can further dispose of those records, they have to be transferred to the archive. They actually have to get permission from the archivist to destroy any records, any of these recordings.
And that's all laid out in the rules?
That's laid out in the regulations.
We
I mean, it's just an observation. I know, Mr. Wade, he's had some experience with this as well, and intergovernmental relations. I mean, normally it'd be judiciary, I would think.
Is this also being socialized through judiciary? Yeah.
Jointly referred or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, what's the? Go ahead,
I was going to ask about the hearings and what happened at the hearings, because there were two hearings on this, right?
Well, there were no hearings on the emergency and temporary bills, which only applied to the UMC.
Okay.
So there were two hearings on the on this particular bill, yes.
And are the open government folks supporting or opposing?
I'm not aware of any opposition to it.
And what's the recommendation of the office?
I think Director Allen addressed that yesterday in an email.
Well, let's put it on the record.
Yeah, we're recommending support of the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next item, the OOG received an inquiry concerning a legislative adjustment to the law concerning closed meetings. The inquiry concerned amending the Open Meetings Act to permit public bodies to enter into a closed session without first voting to close the meeting in open session. The OOG advised that in Maryland, a public body may close part of an open meeting and hold a closed session and may also meet entirely in closed session. Our opinion on this issue is that we should look into it further before making any decision on a change or any official recommendation, but we would like to know the board's thoughts on this as well.
I've not fully thought this through, but I wonder if there is a solution short of allowing closed meetings. My thought is, what if there's a vote during the closed meeting? You would come back on the public record and report out that vote. If you are just having a closed meeting, you don't have that option. If the concern is that the public is coming to meetings only to be frustrated because they are not participants in the executive session or closed portion of the meeting, perhaps the agenda have more detailed that there are no agenda items in the public portion except the vote to close the meeting. These are just stream of conscious thoughts without having more information or background, but I would ask those questions as you're looking into this.
Thank you. The next matter is rulemakings. The Office of Open Government is working on new and revised regulations given the recent changes in the law. As you know, the new change permits the board to review certain advisory opinions issued by the OOG. We drafted a new set of regulations that sets forth the procedure for reviewing advisory opinions for your input, and this is a working draft. The OOG will continue the drafting process and update the board as we complete this project.
Do we have those?
Yes.
Okay.
They're in the Dropbox?
Yes.
Hmm.
I believe I will double check. If they're not, I will make sure that they are in there before you leave today.
Okay.
It's just a one pager.
In the October 4th folder for meeting?
I don't know. I will we'll check on that.
Okay.
We
only go to the board the month, but the board folders.
Okay.
For a number of reasons, we don't go into the files of the offices.
Understood.
Okay.
Understood. But I'll make sure that you have that. And that concludes the OOG Director's Report for October 4th. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Director Wolfenbarger, good morning.
Morning. Update on the status of the OGE's operations, recap of the previous month's activities. These reported statistics may not reflect matters that we are waiting to enter into the new case management system. Current month, we opened no new investigations. We closed four. There are 35 investigations currently open, which is a reduction from 39 last month, and there are 10 investigations that have been stayed and are currently inactive. Of those, one is a Maryland court fugitive case. One is a D.C. Superior Court case from OEA. Six are stayed due to ongoing investigations at the Office of the Inspector General, and two are pending Civil False Claims Act complaints at the Office of the Attorney General.
Which are the two new ones in those categories? The two new ones that were stayed, I see 10, up from 8 last month. In what categories are those two new ones?
Didn't update those.
Do we know? Well, what's a mistake? The 10? Should be 8?
No, it's not 8. There's no change. It'll be 10, 10, and 8.
Oh.
Oh,
last
I see.
Month should have been 10.
Right.
All right.
Publication and reporting obligations. We are in the process of preparing the quarterly complaint report for the last quarter of fiscal year 18. Trainings and outreach attended by staff. This was a very productive month for staff development. Attorney Ashley Cooks attended a program offered by the National Criminal Justice Training Center of Fox Valley Technical College entitled Strategies for Instructional Excellence. Our auditor, Ishmael, took a course on common investigative techniques. Attorneys Stuart Mitchell, Cooks, and King attended an intensive two-day training program on investigative questioning techniques that was offered by the National Institute for Trial Advocacy, or NITA. Attorney Cooks also attended FOIA Express training. Most of the staff attended mandatory case management system training last Thursday on the new system. And finally, I completed three courses offered by OCP, including a course on preparing statements of work and the two-day program required to become a certified OCP contract administrator, which will allow me to serve as the CA for our case management system contract with Wingswept. Trainings conducted by the staff. Since the date of the last meeting, we conducted or participated in 12 trainings, double the six reported at the last meeting. The trainings consisted of three new employee orientations, our monthly ethics training, a Hatch Act training held at DGS, two trainings at the Office of Risk Management, one for the Public Charter School Board, one at the Office of Administrative Hearings, and one at the Office of Cable Television, Film, Music, and Entertainment, and two DC One Fund trainings.
So just one note on training. It has been probably a year, but at one point both offices were working jointly on Dog and Pony Show. I think it went to an ANC. I think that was a great idea. Like to see more of the public outreach training separately combined. I think that's the right direction, but continue.
How did the DCA 1 fund trainings go? Were we well received? Who did it? Well, good. People have a hard time getting mad at you. We're making inroads, huh? The first time we were invited to do it, I did it, and in front of the entire audience, I was told that whatever I say better not influence the amount of money that's contributed. I think we made progress since then. Just to be invited back.
Next on the agenda is 2018 Ethics Day, which is going to be held today following this meeting. The following entities have confirmed participation: the Office of the General Counsel for the D.C. Council, Office of Campaign Finance, Office of the Inspector General, D.C. Bar, and, of course, the Office of Open Government. We have already received positive inquiries from those employees who attended last year and plan to attend again this year. Newsletter. As mentioned last month, we are engaging OCTO in discussions to possibly allow us to disseminate both OGE's monthly newsletter and OOG's quarterly newsletter via mass email to all DC.gov email account holders along the lines of Mayor Bowser's weekly newsletters. OCTO indicated that we would need to get permission from the executive office of the mayor to do that, and was a little busy last month, wasn't able to get around to that, but that is something that we'll work on this coming month. We had originally planned to relaunch OGE's monthly newsletter at some point in September, and Sonia is still leading that effort. However, we temporarily had to put the newsletter project on the back burner because I drafted Sonia to work with me on the implementation of our new case management system, which had a hard stop deadline of September 30th. Having completed that project, Sonia should have sufficient bandwidth available in October to get the newsletter back in circulation.
What did you think of that model I sent over?
It looked good.
That we use at the DC bar? Yeah. Yeah, I understand that's like off-the-shelf stuff from Microsoft Office. It's interactive.
Do you have to download a program again, or is it just
I don't know, but I could put you in contact with the folks who do it.
I could help.
Okay.
I could help in this context and technical issues.
Okay.
Thank you, Wada.
Okay. Thanks.
Advisory opinions, advice, informal advice, approximately 60, which is higher than the 46 reported at the last meeting. Formal advice requests, we received no formal advice requests since the board's last meeting. Ethics legislation / comprehensive code of conduct, unfortunately, we have no new legislative developments to report at this time.
I'll be happy to inform Mr. Grimaldi of that in retirement.
Have we reached out? I know things have been busy, but we might want to reach out to see if
anything we can do to serve as a catalyst to get things moving again.
Yes.
Yes, I'll put that on my agenda for this month. Rulemaking. As we informed the board at our last meeting, we have been contemplating rules to further flesh out the procedures and standards to be applied to both FDS and lobbyist waivers and appeals, and to ensure that our lobbying rules are consistent with the changes the council made in the recent Budget Support Act. We have a draft prepared, but we are not proposing that the board adopt the proposed rules at this time. Asia took the lead in getting those rules drafted. I haven't had an opportunity to review them yet, so it's possible we may make some additional changes with the plan to bring them back before the board at the next meeting.
Okay.
Budget. WADA, Sonia, and I worked with a team from CMTS and successfully completed the implementation process for our new case management system, which went live and was operational last Friday, September 28th. WADA, Brian, and I are collaborating to put the finishing touches on the data migration project to ensure that the data stored in ProLaw is successfully uploaded into the new system. WADA has been painstakingly mapping fields from the old ProLaw database to newly created ones in CMTS, and we anticipate completing the migration probably some point next week. I mean, we've had some very detailed conversations about which fields existed in the old system, really aren't going to play much of a role in moving forward, and where they need to be placed within the architecture and the configuration of the new system. And there's only probably a couple of very minor issues that we're still trying to iron out, but it should be completed soon.
Is it user-friendly?
Very user-friendly. I am tickled to death.
And the staff? By show of hands. Okay, good. And the migration is okay? We're not having compatibility issues? That's unusual.
The data has a lot of need to be cleaned. Some fields are really messed, placed in different location in the old database. Like, for example, the physical address contain email address or contain phone number. I have to extract all these and move it up.
Right.
That phase has been done. Cleaning up the data is done. The only phase that we are in, which is required decisions, basically between Chris and Brian, about which category represent the new category in the new system, which category from the old database represent the new category in the new system. And once this has been mapped, we just shuffle the record to reflect the new system and ship all together.
Yep. One word of caution, because we've just gone through it, I'd be careful about completely deleting ProLaw from folks' computer, because you never know, even a couple of years later, you may need to go back that something is not recognizable under the new system that exists in the old system.
Yep.
So.
We always
absolutely
be cautious to keep backup to most recent, and for further, any changes that we always keep backups of the old systems.
Yeah, I mean, it's some of the decision points, as Wada talked about, involve some manual inspection of the existing ProLaw files to ensure that we're classifying them appropriately in the new system, because we're kind of following a little bit of a different process in creating matters in the new system. It's kind of organized by complaints, investigations, audits, and regulatory matters, which was a classification we didn't have before. So now the lobbyist enforcement stuff will be considered a regulatory matter. Mm-hmm. If someone is filing an FDS designation appeal, that's a regulatory matter. If they're filing an appeal of a civil penalty, lobbyist or FDS, that's a regulatory matter. And when you look in the existing system, there are many cases, not many, but enough to take note of, that are designated or identified as FDS statements. But we can't tell without looking at the case whether it's a regulatory appeal or whether it was an investigation of someone allegedly not submitting a complete form, omitting stuff.
Right,
so
right.
We want to make sure that we're putting investigations with investigations and regulatory matters with regulatory matters.
Okay. Sounds like you have well at hand.
Thank you. Other than that, we are able to complete the bulk of our remaining planned FY acquisitions within our allocated budgetary funding, including the acquisition of 4 new laptops and docking stations, as well as a new network color printer, copier, and scanner. However, we were unable to replace any of the board's video conferencing equipment, primarily due to time constraints. It was just too big of a procurement to get done in that short of a turnaround period.
How did we finish out the year, though?
I can't remember what the exact amount of the surplus was, but we had a healthy surplus.
And our OTIP funds?
I don't believe we had to use any of them. I believe it all rolled over.
Ooh. All right. I'm just worried about they'll come looking for it next year.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you have money in budget fiscal year 19 for the video conferencing equipment?
We'll probably have to work with Nikhil to make sure that we have a joint approach in place to make the updates that are needed, because that equipment basically will be serving both offices, and I'm sure that we'll be able to figure out an approach that makes the most sense. Whoever has funds, if it's us, we'll be willing to take care of it. If we've got to draw on OOG, we'll find a way to get it done.
And the surplus was due to multiple personnel vacancies.
That was the largest reason, absolutely.
Okay.
Salary lapse.
Yep. Staffing. We have two permanent positions that are currently vacant, the third investigator position and our compliance specialist position. The investigator position has closed, and once DCHR finishes evaluating the qualifications of the 94 people who applied for it, we will convene an interview panel to schedule and conduct interviews of the most qualified candidates.
The compliance specialist vacancy was posted on September 25th for a period of 10 days. And when I last looked in the system on Monday, we had already received over 40 applicants for that position, many of whom appeared to be very highly qualified for it. Litigation, status of pending cases. Garen Price, no change since the last meeting. The most recent docket entry reflects that a calendar notice was sent but does not indicate the date of oral arguments. Edwin Adopwe, FDS designation appeal. This appeal was dismissed. Judge Holman, whose written decision was issued on August 14th. We have to determine our next steps on this matter and that of another employee who appealed her designation as a public filer and lost. Neither employee has filed an FDS or paid the required fine. Larry Hicks, this is an enforcement collection action filed to reduce the board's $20,000 fine imposed on Mr. Hicks to judgment. The board imposed the fine in February of 2014 after a contested hearing. OAG recently informed us they refiled a summary judgment motion in the case. Mr. Hicks has until October 9th to file an opposition to the OAG motion. Rashawn French versus Bega, D.C. Superior Court employee is appealing the imposition of a $600 ministerial fine related to his noncompliance with the FDS filing requirements. The pro se case was filed on April 6th. There's been no change in the status of this case since the last meeting. The next status hearing is set for November 30th at 2 p.m. Both the district and Mr. French have been provided with briefing dates.
Just to refresh my recollection, this was one that the board imposed, not you and your new rulemaking authority?
I believe I imposed it or recommended it.
Oh.
It was before the new rulemaking authority was enacted.
Okay.
And I believe...
So that means we did it.
We must have voted upon it, yes.
Okay. And last matter is J. Dillon versus Bega, OEA matter number J-0030-18. This matter has been settled. Lobbyist financial disclosure matters. There are currently 204. This number may change before Thursday. FDS non-filers remain, 57 of which are ANCs. We sent a non-compliance notice to the non-filers on August 1st, giving them until August 10th to come into compliance. That notice was sent out via email and hard copy. The ANCs were not included in the list we submitted to the DC Register. We sent the first round of PFDS fine letters on September 21st, 2018, and a number of non-filers have already contacted our office to request that their fine be waived. Financial disclosure waiver requests pursuant to DC Official Code Section 1-1162. Point 21, subsection A3, anyone adversely affected by a civil penalty imposed under Section 221 of the Ethics Act may appeal said penalty to the Ethics Board. The first waiver request involves an employee of DCPS.
This one I'm going to recuse myself.
I'll let the record reflect that Shamari Wade is leaving the room and recusing himself for this matter.
Ms. Stokes appealed her fine because she felt that the filing instructions were unclear and because she felt she no longer had to file after she separated from district employment. After a review of our records, it appears that Ms. Stokes filed her FDS statements in a timely manner in previous years when she was employed by the district, which lends credence to her claims. Accordingly, OGE does not oppose this request.
Do you have any questions?
If you don't oppose it, I don't oppose it.
Same. Is this something we need to vote on?
I believe so.
All in favor of granting the waiver request for Ms. Stokes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Approved by the board with one abstention. Yes.
Granting the waiver. You had two there?
I was looking at all the names on it.
I thought we agreed that you could sign for the board.
Yeah, I'll sign these later.
We took some action in the past, I think, that said that the board chair could sign on behalf of the board for all matters.
Right?
that's the only one of the employees that involves involves a DCPS employee. So,
all good.
Record reflect that Shamari Wade is rejoining us.
Yeah. Good morning, board members.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The next matter is a past employee, Alicia Lewis. Ms. Lewis appeals her fine due to financial hardship. She admits to ignoring our previous filing notifications, and she claims that she assumed that she didn't need to file the form because she had separated from district employment. And although we are sympathetic to Ms. Lewis's situation and we're inclined to abstain from opposing it, unlike the other people on the list who filed almost immediately when they received the fine notification, Ms. Lewis still has not filed her form. Accordingly, OGE opposes this request.
How is this different than the one we just granted?
She hasn't filed the form yet. She, and in fact, she's the only person requesting.
Ms. Stokes filed her form, but just wanted a waiver of the fine for late filing. And Ms. Lewis continues to refuse to file.
Is that an accurate statement?
I don't know that she continues to refuse. I just know that we haven't received the form yet. And she had expressed sometime last week that she was having issues with the e-filing system, so I provided her with the information for the help portal and made the IT folks aware that she was having an issue, and we haven't heard from her since then.
I continue to be conflicted about these former government employee cases only because I think the purpose of the law was to determine if there existed conflicts, you know, while the person was an employee. And when the person is gone from employment, those concerns are mitigated somewhat. But again, you know, on the other hand, the law is the law, and we shouldn't.
How long ago did you give her the information for Octo?
Sometime last week. Toward the end of last week, probably last Thursday.
Can we table this until the next meeting? And if she still has not filed, then we'll.
I agree.
The next matter is Dr. Cheryl Pearson-Fields, a.k.a. Dr. Amari Sequoia Pearson-Fields. Dr. Pearson-Fields appeals her fine due to financial hardship and because she claims her email address did not work when she attempted to file the form. Also, I want to note here that she made the claims that she attempted to access the system and her email address didn't work, but we have no previous record of correspondence with Dr. Pearson-Fields where she contacted us or where she submitted a help ticket to our IT portal. So we can only assume that she claims that she attempted to log in and her email address didn't work after the extended filing period had already passed. And so having taken her arguments into consideration, we don't believe that a waiver is warranted in this case, and we oppose this request.
Is she still a government employee?
No, past employee.
She's a past employee also?
In fact, all of these folks are past employees.
She submitted her form.
She did.
You, let me ask a practical question. We agree. You fine her. She's no longer a DC employee. What steps do you take to enforce the fine?
Good question. We would notify them that the waiver request was denied and ask them to submit payment immediately and give them the payment information. Beyond that, I believe we give them a particular time frame in which to comply. And beyond that, to my knowledge, collection matters are handled by OAG. Our collection matters. So I don't know.
For these kinds of fines, they're being handled by OAG? Are they taking them?
I assume if we're going forward with them and we want to collect the money, that would be our only recourse.
Yeah. Hmm.
The only other that I have for the non-employee, non-filers, is that in the event that they are district residents, it's possible that we might be able to cooperate with DC Treasury to, if they were getting an income tax refund, to collect the fine.
That's a good point. That's true. For parking tickets and moving violations, those do come out of your income taxes. I hadn't thought of that. I remember when I was doing this, we collecting was almost impossible if there were former employees. OAG wanted no part of it, and so I reached out to Board of Elections and asked how they would handle this when they had it, and their response was that, you know, the fact of the default and the owed money would go up, you know, be publicly posted, and usually when they got a new job and a background search was done, that would show up, and they'd come in wanting to take care of it, and that seemed to work pretty well for them. As opposed to running around doing all these little collection actions. But I like that other one. I like the D.C. Treasury. Maybe you reach out to them and see. But for this case, what she's claiming financial hardship. She's a doctor. What's the nature of the financial hardship? Did she cure everybody?
No, she didn't give details about the financial hardship. She just said that she doesn't have the money to.
How is she different than Ms. Stokes?
The only difference that I can think of is that she claimed that she had attempted in the past to submit the form on the e-filing system, but we found no record of her attempting to file the form. She hadn't emailed the Bega FDS inbox. She hadn't submitted a help ticket to the IT portal to say, hey, I can't log in. This was all coming from her after she had received the fine notice well into September.
So the only difference is you think Ms. Stokes honestly took – she was honest with you in why she didn't file it. Their situations are exactly the same. They both claim hardship. They both did not file. They have both since filed.
I don't think Ms. Stokes
– she's claiming instructions were unclear because she felt she didn't have to file. She honestly believes she did not have to file, and there's evidence to support that. Whereas in Dr. Pearson Fields' case, she's saying that her email address didn't work, which they can't corroborate, and that she couldn't file when she attempted to file. There's no evidence to corroborate that either.
Right. That was her main argument, is that she had attempted to log on to file before, she wasn't able to do so, and then she basically just said, I don't have the money to pay a $300 fine, so classify that as financial hardship, I guess, generally.
Any other questions? All those in favor of granting, how did I phrase it the last time?
Of denying the penalty waiver request.
We may have to revote on, no, we granted that, okay. All those in favor of granting the waiver request for, well, let me phrase it in the recommendation of the office. All those in favor of denying the waiver request for Dr. Pearson Fields, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? All right.
Denied.
Pearson Fields' waiver request has been denied.
You're going to fix that order also?
Okay. The next matter is Ms. Vonda Orders. Ms. Orders appeals her fine because she separated from district employment in February and claims that she did not receive any of OGE's written notices except the fine notice. After a review of our records, it appears that Ms. Orders regularly filed her FDS statements in a timely manner in previous years when she was employed by the district, which lends credence to her claims. Accordingly, OG does not oppose this request.
Any questions?
Nope.
All those in favor of granting the waiver request from Ms. orders, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Waiver request granted.
And just to point out, we seem to, as a board, we seem to be adopting a position where if there's true lack of knowledge about the requirements, once you're a former government employee, that's something that we're willing to consider in granting these.
That's consistent with my thinking, yes.
The next matter is Clara Bereshev. Ms. Bereshev appeals her fine because she claims she did not receive any of OG's notices, written notices, except the fine notice, and she didn't complete the form because she did not know how to do so. After a review of our records, it appears that Ms. Bereshev regularly filed her FDS statements in a timely manner in previous years. She was employed by the district, which lends credence to her claims. Accordingly, OGE does not oppose this request.
Any questions?
Just one. She didn't complete the form because she didn't know how to?
Well, we've transitioned to a new system, this is kind of almost exactly what she said. So we don't have specific details as to whether it was an IT or a technical issue or if she didn't understand the format of the layout of this new e-filing system. She just says she was not sure how to go about completing the form this time.
This one's a little different, though, because this suggests that she had enough knowledge to know that she probably needed to try to file it, but
she
ran into trouble when she was doing it or to thinking
she says
about doing
she
it.
Did not receive any of OGE's written notices except the fine notice.
Right, and we don't have a date of when she attempted.
Oh, I see.
It's all going, but I mean,
perhaps after she got the notice, she tried to do it and it was already too late.
Right.
And even then she had trouble doing it.
Right. So All these people contacted the office in the last week of September after they had received the September 21st fine notice.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I'm okay then.
All right. All those in favor of granting the waiver request for Ms. Bereshev, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Waiver request granted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Asia. Next on the report is lobbyists, the lobbyist program. We're testing out the new electronic format for the lobbyist program. Octo has conducted 4 beta testing sessions on the new system that has been tentatively named the Lobbyist Registration and Reporting, or LRR system. Utilizing the services of a group of lobbyists who volunteered to participate in the development process. I also attended one of those sessions on September 27th. Mark McDermott from Octo indicated he would send me a summary of the feedback they have received from the beta testers so that we could incorporate it into our development efforts. Ishmael is working on sending out enforcement letters to lobbyists who failed to register and or file LARs, lobbyist activity reports. We also have to identify staff to prepare an implementation timeline to ensure that the changes in the lobbying statute are reflected and properly implemented.
And what's your estimated completion date for that?
I would imagine the implementation timeline would probably need to be completed by the time the board meets next, so that we have sufficient time to prepare the educational materials, conduct the educational trainings so that everyone knows what is expected when the new registration and activity report filing season comes up in January.
Okay.
Okay. Lobbyist filing waiver requests for review, number 1711-001. Maryland DC Credit Union Association, pursuant to DC Official Code Section 1-1162.32, subsection C, the Ethics Board may waive the penalty imposed for untimely filing of a lobbyist activity report for good cause shown. At the board's last meeting, you stayed this matter until the next meeting and asked us to solicit additional information from the lobbyist before ruling on its waiver request. One of the last things she did before departing our office, our compliance specialist, Nikayla Redd, prepared a letter to be sent to the lobbyist under my signature requesting that information. I will review the letter and send it out next week upon my return from vacation, and we will share whatever information the lobbyist provides us at the board's next meeting. We are therefore asking the board to continue this matter until the next meeting.
Okay.
Inquiry letters have been sent to two entities concerning allegations of unregistered lobbying activity, and we are awaiting responses from those entities. Nonprofits, we have received $6,400 owed to us by nonprofit organizations who did not qualify for the $200 reduced registration fee. We sent second notices to the remaining organizations on October 3rd, again requesting that they remit payment of the balance owed for their true registration fees. Lobbyist activity reports, we submitted the required list of lobbyist registrants to the DC Register on August 28, 2018. We are conducting beta testing of the new lobbyist e-filing system, and we have also begun discussing how to notify the lobbyists of and implement the changes in the lobbyist rules, which take effect October 1st, 2018. That's something we previously discussed. Lobbyist reminders went out to all registered lobbyists on Monday, June 4th, 2018. The deadline for filing LARs was July 10th, and as of today, we have received 429 lobbyist activity reports. However, there are still six lobbyist non-filers. Non-confidential investigations. The first matter is N. Ray Rochelle Wilson. We served Ms. Wilson with a ministerial fine order by email and certified mail on August 27, 2018. As stated in the order, at the close of our investigation, OGE concluded that Ms. Wilson violated DC Official Code Sections 1-1162.24, subsection A1A, Roman numeral 1, as well as subsection A1A, Roman numeral 2, and A1A, Roman numeral 3 by failing to file fully completed PFDS forms that truly and accurately reflected her and her spouse's business interests, activities, and positions with outside organizations for calendar years 2014, 2015, and 2016 before the annual May 15th deadlines in the subsequent years. We filed Ms. Wilson $2,750 for those violations. She has responded to the order by inquiring about her appeal rights and a payment plan. We advised Ms. Wilson that we would grant her a payment plan by way of a negotiated disposition. And you may recall that we originally offered her a negotiated disposition during her initial interview on November 30th of last year, but unfortunately she declined the offer the following month.
So she has asked about her appeal rights. Does she have a specific time period in which she must file an appeal?
I believe so, and I believe that time frame has expired. But by the same token, I'm open to kind of, how would you say, modifying the fine order to the extent if she wants to enter in a negotiated disposition and have a payment plan, I'm fine with that because I believe, generally speaking, you secure more compliance when people are voluntarily cooperating with your efforts than if you're jamming it down their throat.
Sure, but when is the last communication with her?
I believe it was last week. Is that correct, Asia?
Okay. Okay, so it's only been 2 weeks. Okay.
The next matter is N. Ray Courtney Snowden. This is an investigation referred by the Office of the Inspector General involving.
I think I need to step out for this one.
Sure.
Well, actually, this is the public portion. It's not going to go into any details at all.
That's fine.
Correct. Involving the Deputy Mayor for Greater Economic Opportunity, according to the OIG's report of investigation on three occasions in late summer 2015, Ms. Snowden used government resources for other than official business and ordered, directed, or requested subordinate employees to perform personal services in violation of DPM sections 1807.1, subsections B and C. We are proposing a negotiated disposition to resolve this matter. Next item on the agenda are related cases, N. Ray Antoine Wilson and N. Ray Jennifer Niles. Pursuant to DC Official Code Section 1-1162.12, subsection A, we opened preliminary investigations into whether former Chancellor Antoine Wilson and former Deputy Mayor for Education Jennifer Niles violated the code of conduct by transferring the Chancellor's daughter to an out-of-boundary school after the start of school year 2017-2018. Our team has completed their investigation in these cases, and I am still reviewing their findings and recommendations that they submitted to me yesterday. Next matter is N. Ray Jack Evans. This is a formal investigation into allegations that Councilmember Evans violated the Council Code of Conduct. We are still reviewing and analyzing documents we have received pursuant to discovery requests to formulate next steps. And the last item on this non-confidential investigations is N. Ray Rustin Lewis. This is a formal investigation into whether Rustin Lewis violated the Local Hatch Act, D.C. Official Code, Section 1-1171.01, etc., by filing as a candidate for at-large council member while also being employed as a professor at the University of the District of Columbia. The Local Hatch Act prohibits district employees from filing as candidates for partisan office within the district, and we're proposing a negotiated disposition in this matter.
Anything else, Director?
Nope. You going to vote on it?
No. We will now move to the public comment portion. I remind anyone who wants to speak, you have a total of 3 minutes.
Madam Chair, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Mr. Syndrome. Good morning.
Good morning. Last meeting, I was declined the opportunity to speak. Be that as it may, I have a number of questions I want to ask outright, and then I'll wait for your answer, response accordingly. One, the Jack Evans matter. Will there be a conclusion or an update minimally by next meeting? Two, at the outset, there was a matter. And it was kind of hard to, and as I speak, there may be some bouncing. They're working on the roof of the building, so that's out of my control. It was indicated by the Open Government, their first complaint, an issue or matter involving the Office of Administrative Hearings, if I understand correct. If I could just get it in a nutshell what that was about. When will the Public Service Commission DC employees come under BEGA's watch? My question to you, Madam Chair, is the parliamentary procedure rules versus Robert Rules of Order. If there is an inconsistency, which trumps, which carries the day? It was indicated that Ethics Day was taking place today. If you could kindly provide the time for it and the location. And on these waivers, are the respective individuals involved given notice that the board will discuss them at a given meeting so that they have the opportunity to weigh in?
Can you address those matters that belong to you, Director Wolfenbarger, first?
Yes, I'll do the best that I can. We do anticipate being able to provide some sort of more detailed update on the Evans matter at the next meeting. Nothing guaranteed, but I do believe that's probably going to come to pass. And also regarding the waiver request, yes, we do provide the employees or former employees with a notice that the request will be taken up by the board at its meeting, and they have the opportunity to either appear in person or call in to present arguments on their behalf.
And Director Allen, can you address the Roberts Rules of Orders parliamentary procedure and his question about the first complaint that was dismissed?
With respect to parliamentary procedure, the District of Columbia has not recognized Robert's Rules of Order or any other book of order as the authority for parliamentary procedures. A organization may do that through their bylaws, but there's no official recognition of Robert's Rules of Order. And the issue of parliamentary procedure in general, the Open Meeting Act controls the conduct of all meetings, and to the extent that the Open Meetings Act is silent, a public body may use any rule of parliamentary procedure to fill in those gaps as far as voting and other issues covered by Robert's Rules of Order and other similar procedure manuals. With respect to the complaint, the open meetings complaint regarding the Office of Administrative Hearings, in that case, the complainant essentially asked that the Office of Open Government take action that is outside of our purview with the Open Meetings Act. So the complainant was seeking that this office nullify the decision of the selection of tenures of administrative law judges, which we cannot do. And they also had a FOIA complaint, which is, this is not the proper body for that. We only offer advice, so we have referred them to the mayor, and also they can file a complaint with the Superior Court, which is the procedure.
And Mr. Sinjum, Ethics Day is today. It starts at 11:30 here in the Wilson Building.
Until what time, ma'am? Madam Chair.
4:41. Oh, I'm sorry, 4:41.
You say from 11:30 to what time?
Until 5.
Five, okay. Regarding the Office of Administrative Hearings, it may be helpful, not unlike when there is a complaint, Superior Court judge, the D.C. Commission on Judicial Disabilities and Tenure would handle it. To my understanding, they would not engage or entertain a complaint against a law judge, Office of Administrative Hearings or otherwise. It might be helpful if the board were to make a complainant aware of the options available. My understanding is when there is a complaint against a law judge, it's done by a Superior Court judge, as I understand it, and I could be incorrect, and I don't want to misspeak, but all to say that when this arises, and no doubt it will in the future, maybe have some guidance as to how a complainant is directed where you all lack jurisdiction, but then you advise a complainant accordingly to the entity that would oversee such a complaint.
Thank you, Mr. Sinjum, for that. Your time.
And the Public Service Commission employees, you didn't indicate when they're coming under your watch.
Mr. Sinjum, as you know, they're not by statute. We don't include them. The Public
statute
Service
can be changed.
Commission. Did you hear that?
No.
The members
I didn't hear the...
And the employees of the Public Service Commission are subject to the jurisdiction of the Board of Ethics and Government Accountability.
You said they are?
They absolutely are.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Sinjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do we have any other public comments? All right. At this time, I move that the board enter into executive session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B to consult with an attorney to obtain legal advice and to preserve the attorney-client privilege between an attorney and a public body pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B4A to discuss personnel matters, including the appointment, employment, assignment, promotion, performance, evaluation, compensation, discipline, demotion, removal, or resignation of government appointees, employees, or officials pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B10, and to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-575B13. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The time is now 11:07. We are in executive session. No.
I get to get thrown out before the hearing days.
All right, the time is now 11:32, and we are back on the record in open session. The board has two matters to...
Question and answer periods.
Actually, all right, we are back on the open record. The board has two matters to report out. The first one is case number 1706-001, In Re Rustin Lewis. The board has approved a negotiated disposition with Mr. Lewis for potential violation of the Hatch Act. The negotiated disposition and order will be posted on the board's website by the close of business today. The other matter the board has to report out is case number 1398-001, In re Courtney Snowden. The board has also approved a negotiated disposition with Ms. Snowden. That negotiated disposition and the order will also be on the board's website by close of business today. The next public meeting will be November 1st at 10 a.m., and that concludes the meeting. I will put in a plug for Ethics Day, which started 10 minutes ago. Thank you. You got to do it at the right time.
Stop to take a breath. I'll address your question.